Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn. I'm so glad you joined us today. Make sure you like this video if you like it. Leave a positive comment. It's always nice. Share with your friends. Today, I am really excited about our special guest. I've been watching his podcast for a long time. He has a lot of great wisdom to share. His name is Andrew Rodriguez. Andrew is the owner of Integrity Christian Counseling. He has a podcast called Psycho Bible. Check out that YouTube channel. He's a certified reintegrative therapist, and so he helps a lot of people as they are dealing with sexuality issues. And so today, we just want to learn from his wisdom. Andrew has a heart for people. He walks alongside people. He invests in them. He has a voice in our Christian world about ways of helping people overcome sexual addiction, sexual behaviors. And we are excited just to hear from his wisdom today. He's joining us from the state of Pennsylvania. I love Pennsylvania. And so welcome, Andrew.
Hey, Brady. Good to be on here. Good to finally meet you.
Absolutely. So we've been, it's so weird, this online world. We've been Facebook friends for so long and we interact with each other, but I don't think we've ever actually had a conversation. So it's nice to actually have a conversation and let people in on it.
So
Andrew, I just want to start with a little bit of your story. What has Jesus done in your life? And then how has that led you to wanting to help other people apply the gospel to their lives? What has Jesus done? How has he brought you to where you're at today?
Okay. I can be long-winded, so I'll give a short version.
Sounds good.
I'm blessed to have parents who were on fire for God. Both come from very different backgrounds. My dad come from a very dysfunctional background. My mom from a very traditional background, but God brought them together. And so I'm blessed that my parents wanted to instill in us from an early age a relationship with Christ. So I accepted Christ and made him my master at a young age, like age four, accepted Christ. And I've just been steadily following God ever since then. And of course, been through lots of up and downs, experienced things like being bullied, dealing with a lot of loneliness growing up, and coping with that. And so, you know, even as a Christian, I've gone through different experiences where I've had to learn more about who I am in Christ, that my identity is in him, that ultimately, he's the one I can rely upon, that he's my source for my confidence, for my worth, my value. So he had to instill that stuff into me in my teen years, where I had to get through a period of depression and was coping with like compulsive masturbation to deal with my loneliness. And so it was as I was starting to discover who I am in Christ, reduced the shame I was experiencing, reduced the concern with how people viewed me, helped me work through things like perfectionism. So there's just so many other like hills and valleys in the walk of God, but I've steadily been following him. I'd never had like this backsliding experience or rebellion stage, but I've definitely had my ups and downs in life. So that's basic overview of my testimony as just someone who's been steadily following Christ my whole life. The other part of that, what got me involved in working with people with sexuality issues? Well, like I said, like I had my own sexual struggles, my own sexual sins. And, you know, when I was a teenager and didn't know who I could talk to about that stuff. And I really wish I had someone I knew would understand that I could talk to. Like I didn't know how much my dad would understand if I were to try to talk to him. So I kind of dealt a lot of things privately on my own. And it wasn't until I started to actually work through it and I was already gaining some ground that then I was at a youth retreat and one of the youth leaders starts opening up about his history of struggling with porn. And I'm like, other guys deal with this stuff? But I wasn't dealing with porn necessarily, but just lustful thoughts and acting out in my own way. So to hear that, oh my gosh, there's others and they're openly talking about it. I wish I had known about that like a couple of years prior. So there's that experience. And also in high school, if I backtrack, I've always wanted to be an artist. So my expectation was I was never going to even go to college, maybe art school. I was just going to be a comic book artist. And I like, oh, I'm not going to go to college. But then while I was in high school, I took a psychology class and I just fell in love with psychology when I was a sophomore in high school. And so my intention was to become an art therapist, combine my two loves. So I knew from early on I wanted to be a therapist. And especially I had the blessing of being able to take some college courses in psychology when I was still in high school. And one of the books we had to read, this was at Lancaster Bible College. One of the books we had to read was All About Your Identity in Christ, Search for Significance. And so that was one of the big breakthroughs for me, understanding my identity in Christ. So that just became one of my motivations. Like that helped me become a breakthrough for me, helping me work through things like shame, perfectionism, like I was saying. So that lit a fire in me to want to help other people experience that same freedom that I had come to experience. So when I went to college, went to a Christian college, I was my motivation was I want to just help people understand the truth of who they are. Now, I just mostly thought of that in general terms, but God had a plan. He started bringing other guys across my path who, like, literally, I wasn't seeking this out. He just kept bringing guys who were like acquaintances of mine. Some of them weren't even like really close friends, but I became privy to them struggling with a variety of sexual issues, whether it was heterosexual porn struggles or guys who were dealing with unwanted same-sex attraction. And the campus I was at the time, they didn't have any sort of counseling services on campus. They didn't have any sort of resources for people who were struggling with any sexual issue at all. And I had the blessing of being able to intern at a counseling practice that actually at the time was a member ministry of Exodus International. And they were a counseling practice that specialized in all sorts of sexual issues, not just same-sex attraction. And that was a very powerful internship experience. So when I returned to campus after that, God put in my heart, you're going to start up a support group for guys, in particular for guys dealing with same-sex attraction. The school did not like that idea. So I had hit a lot of opposition from the school. They took a very disciplined approach that, well, there shouldn't be a support group that guys can go to because then they'll just go to that and they won't come to student life where we can discipline them. And so we butted heads. Wow. They wanted me, if I was to start up a support group, they wanted me to report them, any of the members of the group, if they admitted to breaking any of the codes of conduct. So they didn't want confidentiality, all this stuff. So it was an uphill battle to start up a group. Eventually what happened is I started up a support group for, it was a general group for guys dealing with pain from the past. And, but every school year, half the guys were dealing with unwanted same-sex attraction. The other half of the guys were dealing with heterosexual porn addiction and sexual addiction issues. And so I led that group for 8 years. I was graduated by my wife. I met my wife when I was in college. And she was still a student for several years after we got married and after I graduated. But I'm still living in the area. And I'm like, hey, I want to leave my school in a better place than how I came in. So I volunteered to run this group for years while I was working an office job. And then halfway through my time doing that, I went to grad school. So I can finally, like, I want to do this full time. Like, I love working with these guys. It just, there were so many powerful experiences. Just creating a place, a community on campus that was safe for guys to open up about these issues and find community, find hope, healing to some degree for that short period of time where they're on campus. And so eventually I went to grad school and long story short, experienced some difficulties in grad school because of the work I do, because I was very open about working with guys with unwanted same-sex attraction. But God brought me through that and got me even more connected with other people. That led me to getting connected with one of my heroes in the field, Joseph Nicolosi Sr., and the rest is history. So,
awesome. There's so many questions I want to ask you right now and observations I'd like to point out. One is that I love that you started this group with just guys with hurt and pain from their past, and it ended up being every year a whole bunch of guys with same-sex attraction, some with heterosexual attraction. And I think that's awesome. You're able to have a ministry to both. How do you like balance out, you know, guys with same-sex attraction, they're have some unique things about them, and we don't want to dismiss the differences, and yet we want them to feel included, like we're all in this together. Sometimes I feel like we go one extreme or another on, you guys are so different, you belong over there in that ministry, and that makes them feel even more excluded. Or it's like, oh, we're all in this together, all of our sin is the same, and therefore you don't need to talk about your unique struggle and your discipleship that maybe looks a little bit different than mine.
Yeah. Yeah. Integrated groups, I think, are the way to go. When you have a group where it's maybe the one thing they all have in common, some sort of sexual struggle, like I think if you want to make it that's the commonality, great. Because there's some guys we had who joined the group, but they didn't have any sexual struggle. They didn't know how to fit in. But, you know, the guys who are at least dealing with something sexual, but when they understand that, oh, wait, my sexual struggle may be heterosexual and addicted to porn or acting out, and yours may be same-sex attraction. The fact that they're still struggling with something that they can share in common, something that help reduce some of the shame, some of the stigma. But it's really, in particular for guys with same-sex attraction, it's really important for them to get to that place where they understand that they're not a separate category of man. So when we just sort of single them out, you have your SSA group, and then the guys with heterosexual struggles, they go here. It can actually increase the very thing that's at the root to their struggle, the shame, the sense that they're different. And so when they're integrated, I've some of the best experiences I've had in that group were the guys who were dealing. There's one memory comes to mind. One year we had in the group, was one of the guys who was actually like considered like one of the coolest guys on campus. You know, he was athletic and he was just, everyone thought he was the coolest guy. And he was in the group dealing with heterosexual porn struggles. And you have a bunch of other guys dealing with SSA. And when one of the exercises we did, that there's one exercise that really helped with bringing cohesion to the group. About halfway through the school year, I assigned them to do a life timeline where they draw out a line, they identify key moments in their life and how emotionally impactful those moments were. And they work on it over like Thanksgiving break. And so when we come back after that, they each take time sharing their story, sharing key moments. And it's up to them what they share. They don't have to share their whole story, just pick a few moments. And so people can choose to still be pretty guarded or to be vulnerable. And this particular guy, he decided to open up and he went first. And he shared about how he was molested as a young boy by an older cousin. And that just sort of set the tone for the other guys who were so ashamed of their stuff to then open up. And when one of the guys of SSA shared, and he was really scared to share that he was actually, in his story, he was the perpetrator. He was someone who initiated experimenting on a younger cousin or friend, forget the case. And so when he shared that level of vulnerability, the other guy who is like the one they all looked up to, he said, after you just shared that, how vulnerable you were and how honest you were, I respect you even more. And it's just like, whoa, for these guys to feel like they all had this in common, even though it might have turned out differently. Some had SSA, some didn't. It brought this cohesion and a sense of community, and like, it helps reduce the sense that you're uniquely broken, you're uniquely damaged. So it's so important.
Yes. In my own journey, you know, it was really encouraging when I finally found Exodus was the ministry at the time, right before they closed down. But reading through their testimonies and eventually I met a few other guys, and that was really encouraging how some people I could relate to. Yet throughout the years, the people who had the biggest impact were just normal heterosexual guys in my church who would love me and make me feel like I belonged and I'm not some special category. And so, you know, I think we have to be cautious with that. And we can minister to people who we might not fully understand. We might not understand why this person is struggling with that, but we can still include them in our community and in our church life and in our small groups. And we can be curious and, you know, examine what's going on in their heart and let them be fully known and seen, even if we don't completely understand what it is that they're struggling with.
Yeah. So important.
Yeah. You know, on that topic of not dividing us into categories, a big, you know, debate in the Christian world right now is identity. And there's side B theology that makes our identity about our, you know, sexual feelings, the celibate gay Christianity. And I've spoken out about that movement many times on my podcast, and I know that you have too. What are the warnings and the downfalls and the traps that come from making your issue or your same-sex attraction your identity?
Yeah. And to be fair to them, they would, you know, most of your so-called side B advocates would say that, well, it's still subordinate to your identity in Christ. So it's not,
yes,
it shouldn't be
yes.
the main identity. And so I want to be fair to them with that. But I still see a problem with essentially what they're doing is they're buying into the world's paradigm of what I call the sexual orientation paradigm, where they view their sexuality through a lens of just something that you are. That if I experience a certain type of sexual attraction or arousal template, and it seems to be the most common one that I experience, then that is an indication of what I am. And so when you take that sort of approach, and it makes sense that they take that approach, you know, it's, to me, it's a misguided or ill-informed conclusion to come to, but it's understandable. I can understand why someone arrives at that conclusion.
100%. I understand how they get there.
Yeah. But the problem is it then becomes a trap. It becomes like your prison that you can't then think outside of that. So the main thing I try to train my clients in is to get to a place of being curious and just open to whatever the outcome may be. But the problem is when you lock yourself in to this is what I am, then you limit the what you consider possibilities for yourself. There's actually been some research done. There was actually a very diverse group of researchers, both actually gay identified psychologists and conservative psychologists working together to try to do some research on demographics of people who experience same-sex attraction, both those who identify as LGBTQ and those who experience same-sex attraction but don't identify as LGBT, or just LGB. It was just about homosexuality, not gender identity. And what they did one survey, and then they did another subset of surveys, so not everyone did the second one, but they asked them about different types of interventions they might have experienced throughout their lifespan to try to help them with their same-sex attraction. And what they found is that for those who were entrenched in LGB identity, most of the interventions were not helpful. So it's like you limit yourself and you limit your capacity for growth when you've locked yourself into an identity, that this is what I am. You have that mentality. Those who held off on making that identity that, oh, because I have same-sex attraction, this means I'm gay. Or, I mean, these days, gay is passe. You got your sexual orientation now is based on whatever the nuances are of your sexual arousal template. So it's, you know, pan and bi and demisexual and all these other things. So, you know, when you start making an identity out of what you feel, then you're not very open to the possibility of that changing. It just locks you in.
Yes. Yep. And I've experienced that downfall too. You know, when I first came to know Christ, I never really identified strongly as gay publicly, but, you know, I was okay with that label if that's what people, even after I came to know the Lord, I was okay with that label if that's what people thought of me as. And I then realized later it was limiting my healing. And it was causing a lot of confusion for other people. And so I eventually started to much more strongly reject the label and really teach on like, this isn't who I am. It's not who I have to be. It doesn't define me. And it just causes so much confusion for the world when we identify as that, because someone who identifies as gay but believes that we can't act on it because of our spiritual convictions. It's really using the word gay in a different with a different definition than the world is. Yeah. And it causes a massive amount of confusion.
Heck yeah. I don't think the world uses it in the way that they say that. Oh yeah, this is what people mean when they, like Preston Sprinkle will say that, well, when I hear someone say gay, I just assume they mean that this is what they experience, same sex attraction.
That's not how the world defines it. That's not how the world defines it. You're accepting it and you're living it and it's part of who you are and you're celebrating it.
Yeah.
And so it just, that to me, our witness to the world is one of the biggest downfalls of the gay label. And then, you know, it caused a lot of confusion with guys or frustration when then they go to a Bible believing church and it's like, well, I'm a gay Christian, but I mean something different by that than you mean by that. But I demand that you accept that identity, but you can't because you believe that homosexuality is wrong, but we're just talking on in different terms here. And so I just don't want to see guys go down that trap. I want them to have a healthy identity in which we are so much bigger than our struggles and our problems and our feelings, and we don't have to identify by them. And we're so much more than that. And we also don't have to wallow in shame and secrecy. I see sometimes this false dichotomy being built, and some of the side B proponents will strongly speak on, well, I've accepted my identity as gay because I couldn't live in the secrecy and the shame anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not, those aren't the only two options. Like, we can not be defined by our feelings and those labels and still live in authenticity and in deep community and be fully known by other people.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that drives that is we have an all or nothing approach.
Yes.
Even though they're not quite going fully all in, because, you know, the most consistent would be, well, you might as well just embrace homosexuality then. What I would say is where I land in that transformation stream is that's the most consistent with the other end, is being most open to whatever God may have, not locking yourself into just, I might be gay, but I'm not going to act out. And like, the world isn't really comforted by that. I think they think that this is a more compassionate approach, but
yeah,
I'm not sure if you've ever heard of Church Clarity. It's a website that someone created.
I don't believe so.
So there's this, it's a gay identified Christian who, like, it's totally side A, so totally affirming, who he doesn't like when churches aren't clear on, or there's maybe a couple people that developed this website, but they weren't satisfied with churches that weren't clear about whether or not they're affirming. So when they say that, oh yeah, we welcome everyone, they're like, well, what do they actually mean? So they go to different churches and they study their material, then they check their sermons to see what's clear about this. Are they actually gay affirming or not? And they kind of use it as their way to categorize churches about how affirming they are. Well, the bottom line is they don't care if you're a church that supports side B. If you're like, well, we accept all gay people, you know, but just don't act on it. That still is not affirming.
Like, that's, they reject you if you're not acting on it and you believe that it's a sin to act on it because that's offensive to them.
Yeah. You're not, who are you accommodating then? And so ultimately all it does is just sort of leave Christians then in this state of, well, like this in-between state, which is fine because we're all in transition of some sort of our sanctification and healing and growth, but it kind of plateaus them or keeps them stuck.
Yeah. It keeps a foot in the door. It keeps their heart divided in some ways.
Yeah.
That's really great, Andrew. I want to talk a little bit about marriage. I'm always careful when I talk about marriage with SSA people because we can, you know, get things wrong. I'm obviously married now. So I went through my 20s being single and I thought I'd never be married. And some of the traps I fell into were, you know, I'd seen Christians put their hope in marriage too many times and idolize marriage. And I didn't want that. I'd also seen marriage being misused as a means of someone's redemption instead of Christ, right? Yeah. Like, well-meaning Christians of like, oh, I'm just praying God brings you the right woman and she'll be a healthy outlet for your misplaced sexuality, and then you'll be okay. You'll be able to control yourself and not give in to same-sex attraction. And I saw that being very dangerous. Like, I don't want to my wife to be an outlet for my lust, and that's not my wife is not going to cure my same-sex attraction.
Yeah.
And so, but then I see a lot of guys rejecting marriage because they think that their same-sex attraction has to be completely healed, and then it never is, and so they never pursue marriage. And so what is some wisdom for guys with SSA, and as a lot of us walk along guys with SSA, on when should, when is it healthy to pursue marriage? I know everybody's story is different. Everyone needs some pastoral guidance and wisdom. But what are some red flags there that someone, oh, maybe you shouldn't be pursuing marriage right now, or, oh, maybe you're being too closed off to marriage and it could be a possibility for you.
Yeah. It's loaded. So let me see.
Yes, there is so much that can be unpacked.
I love this. So let me get some basic thoughts here. When I'm working with clients, for example, I want them to have an attitude of openness to whatever God may have for them.
Yes, that's great.
At the same time, it's sort of this paradox of being open to the more while being accepting of their current state. So that's what I explain that the therapy approach I take, we're taking a curious, mindful approach. So where you're accepting non-judgmentally of what your current experience is, so that you can learn from it. You're entering into a curious mode where you can learn from what you're dealing with, and you're open to the possibility of things changing. So if someone is maybe sort of in a state where they're demanding, I better get married, like they will not be satisfied with God, with life, with existence, until their attractions have completely reversed and they have no remnant of SSA any longer, and they only experience sexual arousal toward women or toward at least their wife, or, you know, some people just, they want to be completely reversed so that they're just like every other stereotypical straight guy. If you have that sort of demand, you probably will be, well, one, you're not going to be satisfied, because not likely going to happen that way. And then that demand will actually interfere with the very healing process. So one thing,
and it'll lead to more shame.
Yeah.
And you're not getting what you're demanding, and then you feel more shame, and then it's this downward cycle, and that shame leads to more of what your heart longs for when it's feeling shame, which is more same-sex attraction.
Yeah. It is a bit of a paradox in that we want to have an hopeful expectancy that we can trust.
I love that.
That God will bring good. He desires good for me. So one of the markers that I'm looking for to see that someone is ready for marriage is that if they're in a state of readiness to be a good gift and also to receive the gift of the other. I use a lot of language from Theology of the Body from Pope John Paul II. In understanding that your core identity, especially if you understand it as, if God is love and we're made in his image, then at the core of your identity is to be a gift of love. And so we don't just want people to experience heterosexual attraction. Like that's not the epitome of what God wants for us. It's, we want to get to a state where we're ready to be a good gift. And so that means that you see yourself as having intrinsic value as a person, and also that you see your value as a male. So if I'm working with a male client, for example, that you see that you are one of the guys, that you are secure enough. There might be lingering insecurity, like you need to be perfect, but you're secure enough in understanding that you are male and you're made to be a good gift to a woman, and that you see the other as a good gift for you. That's ultimately what's at the bottom of attraction. What is real? What is attraction? It's to recognize the other as good for you. That's, so when you see that someone has same sex attraction, that tells me this person sees someone, people of the same sex, as being good for him. That there's something that members of his own sex have that he needs, that he's lacking. when you get to a place where you have attractions toward the opposite sex, because you've come to a place of enough security in who you are, that you realize there's more, there's something else, and a desire to obtain that, a desire to unite with that which is other of me. So when you can get to that place of where you're just open for whatever God may have, it will lead you to a place ultimately of being ready to offer yourself as a gift to the other and being willing to receive the other as a gift.
Yes, I love that paradigm and that language so much. That is extremely, extremely helpful. One of the first things that I learned when I came to know Christ and was doing some research and found some resources, which I know it's been said a million times by a million people, but the opposite of homosexuality isn't heterosexuality, it's holiness. And so I need to be seeking holiness in Christ as my ultimate goal. And out of that, heterosexuality may come and, you know, but that should be my goal, is holiness with Christ. And I love how you phrase that, of being at a place where you can be a good gift to a wife and accept a wife as a good gift from you. I think that is a good benchmark to try to evaluate and to work towards.
It doesn't guarantee you you'll now have a wife. You know, like, we're never, I wasn't promised my wife. I'm blessed in that I met my wife in college at a young age, and she's my first everything. I didn't date in high school or even my first year of college. I didn't date until I met the woman who became my wife. I'm very grateful for that. I understand that's not the norm. But there's also the possibility that you may get to that place where you're ready for marriage and it doesn't happen for you. So absolutely, we're never guaranteed.
And so we better not put our hope in that. And if it does happen for you, so many things happen in marriage, like adultery, divorce, a death. And it's like, I sure hope that if my spouse dies, I mean, no matter what, that's going to be a tragic, tragic event. But if that's where my hope is, then I am now in a place without hope.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, one other thing you touched on was, and I love the way that you phrased this, was looking, having this insecurity as a guy of looking at another guy and thinking there's something in him that I need. Mm-hmm. And one of the paradigms that helped me so much was seeing that the guys that I'm attracted to have something that I wish that I had for myself. Physical characteristics, talents and abilities, personality traits, and that were really making up for my insecurities. And once I started to see that, I could very quickly look at a guy that I was attracted to, where previously it would take me months to work through like this infatuation with him. And eventually I could very quickly realize, oh, I'm have this instant attraction to him because I'm insecure about my weight and he's super thin, like I desperately wish I was. And I could very quickly go to the Lord, go to my wise counsel, my pastor, community, confess that, allow them to speak security and value in my life. And you know, my attraction towards that person would go away because I would see quickly, it's like, I shouldn't be using them to take something for myself. My security comes from Christ, not from being thin like that person is, or having that charming personality that I wish I had, or those talents and abilities that I wish I had. I don't need to take that from that person because I am who Christ wants me to be. He delights in me as his son. And he values me and cherishes me, and he made me exactly how he wants me to be. And that gave me freedom from demanding to take these things from these other men, that then my heart would try to do that in an emotional and sexual way.
Yep. Yeah. I hear this story all the time. As guys I work with or guys I know, as I just grow more secure in who they are, there's nothing to hook on for the attraction to hook on to. Like the SSA, it needs shame about yourself for it to be activated. If there's no shame, there's no SSA. So when we work on the shame at the root, the sense that you're inferior as a man, that you don't belong, that you're not like the other guys, when that gets healed, that gets resolved more and more, it's the desire to obtain something from the other man, really, it dissolves.
Yes.
And one thing I noticed is like, what's behind sexualization? What's behind things being eroticized? is the greater the deficit, the greater the desire. The more that we sense we're lacking something, the more that just not by choice, but just unconsciously, just physiologically, we're more aroused by that which we perceive as a good that we need. And so it increases our desire for connection with that. So it doesn't mean that just because you experience same-sex attraction, that means that, oh, you're sitting just by feeling the attraction, but it should be something you view as an indicator. Something in my heart level, something in my the level of my soul needs to be addressed, because I'm seeing something attractive in this man or in my fantasy about him that tells me, it gives me a clue about where there's a lack, where there's a deficit, where there's a wound in my own soul. So use the attraction as a clue for what God wants to heal.
Yes, that's great. I want to shift gears for a moment. I see a lot of your videos on, you know, sexual attraction, you know, arousal, and people you aren't used to using that word, but it's important that we talk about those concepts. Let's talk for a moment about gender. We live in a culture that's so crazed with gender issues right now, and transgenderism, non-binary, you know, there's a lot of social contagion going around with those identities. And how do we process that as Christians? How do we see that? How do we help people? What is some of the lens in which we should be viewing this?
Okay. So a couple different lens. One part of it is a social contagion, where a lot of it is a fad. So when you see it with a rapid onset gender dysphoria, especially among adolescent girls, most of that is very surface level. This is a trendy thing to do, not to downplay how dangerous it is, because it's like
it can take them to some horrible places.
Where they now have made some very drastic decisions about their life with under ill advisement. So, and I would say you also see a lot of very surface level LGBTQ plus identification. There's been some studies that show that the amount of people, especially Gen Z and Gen Alpha, and millennials as well, who identify as LGBTQ plus, is not proportionate to the number of people who are engaging in LGBTQ plus behavior.
That's so interesting.
It's real easy just to say you identify, but not actually do anything that's consistent with that, whatever that identity may be. So there's that indicates there's a lot of fad going on. So on one hand, I caution people from overreacting, and let's be the level-headed ones who are just going to stay solid on understanding male, female, you know, this is how God has created us. That reality is not changing just because the world is going mad about this issue. And we need to just be consistent in our language. We need to not adopt the world's terminology. I think a lot of conservatives actually got themselves in more trouble by agreeing with some of the premises of the LGBT or gender ideology by saying, well, yet sex and gender are two different things. That gender can be more just how you think, and that no. Why don't jump into agreeing with them? Don't use their terminology. You know, it was understood for many years that gender was just being used synonymously with sex. And I don't like also
as there's so many areas where we've tried to accommodate the world, and it's ended up just clouding our own faith, our own, you know, Christianity, and it's been a compromise that is leading to death. And when we try to accommodate the world, and then it becomes just our worldly system, which we're adding a little bit of Jesus to it, and which then ends up being a gospel-less Christianity.
Like I was going to say, like one of the other things I can't stand is when people even use terms like biological sex. Is there any other? But when you have a truly Christian worldview is integrated, meaning that you see this, Nancy Piercy talks about this in Love Thy Body and Total Truth, and which she gets from Francis Schaeffer, that the Christian worldview, and this is the understanding of humanity up until the Enlightenment, is that the spiritual and the physical are integrated, that there's an overlap, that the moral and the physical are integrated, but we have a Gnostic heresy that's run through even the church that has been manifesting in this gender ideology now, that we need to be careful not to endorse in any way. So when we use terms like, well, there's your gender identity and there's biological sex. No. It's just sex. There's no biological sex and non-biological sex. What would that be? No, there's no such thing. We need to be certain, because it's all integrated. Your identity is, God gave you your body to tell you who you are. Your body is your indicator of who you are. So when I look at the trans issue, it makes sense that that has been the outgrowth. I know a lot of people try to say, oh, trans is totally different from homosexuality. No, it's a progression. It's the extrapolation of the lie at the root of homosexuality. Homosexuality is a confusion about teleology, of what the purpose of your sexuality. Mm. Transgenderism is a confusion of ontology, of what you are, male or female.
Mm.
And when like we were talking about earlier, most guys with SSA, what's at the root is a sense of gender inferiority or gender insecurity or a confusion about who they are. May not at the ontological level yet, but a sense of how they are as a man. And so the trans is an extrapolation of that. As you continue the insecurity, then it gets more and more to the point of, well, am I even a man? So that's why you see that a lot of times people say, oh, trans
is... I see a lot of, trans individuals who started out with same-sex attraction and then it kept progressing.
Exactly.
What they're doing wasn't giving them peace, and their life gets more and more extreme as they further go down that road. And I'm thankful that I was, raised at a time when the transgenderism wasn't really an option then. I'm sure there's still some people at that time who were dealing with gender dysphoria, but it wasn't a mainstream option. And now it's like, that's just part of the journey of SSA and then rejecting your gender completely. I was talking to a friend yesterday, we had coffee, and he was telling me about his transgender, niece who thinks that she is a boy, and it's tragic, has had all the surgeries and absolutely abusive at what's happened to her. But he looked through his niece's book of artwork, and so talented at artwork, and he told his wife, that is like a woman's artwork. There is a feminine aspect to it that she's had surgeries and dresses like a man and uses a boy's name, and they won't use her pronouns that she wants. But it's like, that was such a deep revelation to them, even though my friend already believed that this is a girl and God made them to a girl. But it's like, you can't erase how even expressively this artwork, it comes out in her book of art. It's like, it has just feminine, female dripping in it. And I thought that was such a powerful moment of revelation and observation that he made.
Which is, ironic, because the whole idea behind transgenderism is that gender is all mental. So you would think then, if she's going to believe she's a boy, that her presentation, her interest would be all masculine stuff. And the way she would create her artwork would be masculine type stuff. So it's like, it doesn't even fit her own ideology that she's espousing.
Yes, absolutely. That deep down in the core of wherever this creativity coming from, like, can't change that. Mm-hmm. And I see this gender ideology, preaching to the choir here, leading to such tragic results, and kids trying to escape something, and trauma, abuse, shame, and just they desperately want to be another person. And sometimes that is the route that they take to try to escape who they are, because they're filled with shame over who they are.
Yeah. I don't see a whole lot of trans. I do have some clients with gender dysphoria. I've had some men with autogynephilia. I do work with gender issues. But a lot of times it's, if you just give them the space to explore what's beneath it, like the conclusions they'll arrive at, they can get there. If they don't have this outside pressure from society and their friend groups, and just, it's so ubiquitous now, all the LGBTQ promotion. Like, if it's,
yeah, if and social media gets them so hooked in TikTok and so much social media where that becomes their bubble, and so many loud voices of them telling them to escape to here. This will give you peace. This is where you'll find life. We'll love you, accept you. You belong here. And it leads to so much darkness and death. But then they get so much caught into that bubble. That's the only voice that they're hearing.
And I might sound like a dinosaur, but that's why I do not recommend parents let their kids have cell phones or unhindered internet access. No,
absolutely. Like, absolutely. There needs to be some strong, strong regulations there. And so many times I hear parents say things like, well, I just believe in, you know, helping my kids to navigate that well, but they just have no idea what their kids are actually exposed to. So their kids aren't navigating it well. And so their kids are keeping secrets, or they're accidentally exposed to something that they can never unsee, that affects their heart in deep, profound ways that the parent just has no idea.
How do we ever survive without that stuff? Like, seriously, it's our own generation who grew up without it that is allowing it. And it's like, come on.
Yeah.
Use some wisdom here.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have any other thoughts for parents right now, with parents raising young kids and teenagers in this LGBTQ filled, sex crazed, identity politics world? Do you have any thoughts for how parents can help navigate that with their kids?
Yeah. So unfortunately you can't keep your kids in a bubble either. So I was homeschooled all 12 years. But yet I wasn't like most other homeschoolers in that, we weren't sheltered. And so, like I said, my dad came from a really rough background. He was into drugs and all sorts of stuff before he became a Christian, and set free when he became a believer. So we heard the stories. My parents, we also were involved in a lot of ministries in helping people who were dealing with drug and alcohol recovery or coming out of prison. We'd volunteer with a halfway house that one of our old churches was involved in. And yeah, so you have to, I'm just saying that because that helped inoculate me from things. I was protected in some ways from influences from the world, to the point where at least I didn't care about being trendy, about whatever the fads of the world were. I'm very nonconformist, so I'm like, well, then I don't care about that. Everyone else is into whatever the fad is these days. I'm now into the opposite of it. So
yes,
you got to inoculate your kids against fads. You got to get to the point where they see though the world is like shifting sands and winds. It's always going different directions. It's not stable. They need to be plugged into, good church life. You at home need to be demonstrating to them having a stable, consistent walk with God, and being authentic with your walk with God, being honest when you make mistakes as parents, when you make mistakes as a spouse. Your kids need to witness you resolving and reconciling with your spouse. So they need to see what it looks like to have healthy communication. You need to practice reflecting and not just correcting your kids, but show that it's safe for them to be honest with you and that you'll respond with showing understanding, so that they know if I have a question about anything in life, I know I can at least talk about it with my parents. They might not know all the answers, but I could talk to them. So they need to know.
There needs to be some discipleship, some heart level conversation, not just protecting them, but shepherding their hearts.
Yeah. So it's fundamental that parents need to be the greatest authority in their kids' lives, and authority in the subjective sense. Like, your kids need to understand that you know stuff and that you are not swayed by the opinions of the world. You actually are firm and stable, but you're also reasonable. So being a tyrant in the home either, it doesn't fly. The kids will push back against that. So kids are like bars of soap. So you can't hold them too tight. They'll fly out of your hand. So you got to treat them gently. As they age, you got to move past the, here are all the rules, the do's and don'ts. So as they're starting to enter adolescence, you move from, here's why we do this. Here's why we believe this. And give them opportunities for them to figure it out. What within limits, within guidelines, of course. You don't just hand your kid a gun and just say, figure it out. No, you give guidelines, coach them through life. So I think it's a breakdown. There's a lot I can say about all this. So what we see.
No, that's great.
With how we've been, even the world of psychology, when I was in grad school and you take a lifespan class, when we get to the section about adolescence, they talk about how the way we approach adolescence these days is we allow kids to go through an identity moratorium, where we let kids just sort of pick and choose their identity and let them figure it out on their own. And that might be goth, or might be emo, that might be into punk, whatever. They might try on different identities. Well, that's when it was like pretty innocuous stuff. But now it's trans is one of the potential identities. But I'm like, I saw that as problematic even back then, because kids still need guidance, and they actually get more anxious when they're not given any guidance. You know, it does more harm as well if you are super controlling, but if you don't give them any guidance, they actually get more anxious. They need to know where the limits are, where the guidelines are. And then you coach them through it. You help be a place where they can bounce ideas off of.
Awesome. Absolutely. That's absolutely great. Yeah, we want to continue to shepherd their hearts and develop a healthy identity, and not just, you know, make them live in a bubble, because that's not going to prepare them for the world. And we model faith to them, and we are, you know, model a humble walk with the Lord.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, as you're, you know, looking at the world out there, what else do we need to know about sexuality? We are all ears. I want to, you know, I'm here to pick your brain today. You are the expert. Everyone gets tired of hearing my voice. And so what is pressing on your mind today? What do we need to know? You know, this is mostly a Christian audience. They're here to be equipped, is why people listen. Mm-hmm. And so what does the world, the average everyday Christian, need to know today about navigating sexuality issues?
It's funny timing, because I just put out today, the day we're recording this, put out a video on how the conversion therapy narrative that's out there is a psyop.
Oh, yes. That's so a good one.
It's made to manipulate and essentially brainwash the masses to believe all these lies. And so the advice at the end of that is you need to question the narratives. You need to be skeptical. Mm. And so as you're asking the question, I'm thinking about how over the past several years, everyone's talking about being red-pilled. Yeah, the big phenomenon in the conservative world, or at least more like the classical liberal and libertarian world, is being red-pilled. And so I just joined X. Like I've been avoiding Twitter for the longest time, but just in July, I finally joined X.
I hate
Twitter. I've avoided it for the longest time. But I remember I came across this post on X. Someone said, "What was it that red-pilled you?" And I'm like, it's so funny to me, because growing up a conservative Christian at that, you don't need to be red-pilled. You already know that the world is anti-Christian. The world's messaging about everything is going to go against our what we should believe. And so I didn't need a red pill for me to know not to trust what I hear from the news most of the time, not to trust most of what I see in the textbooks about human sexuality. And, you know, I had already a skepticism about what I would hear. So as Christians, yeah, we can't be too comfortable. I think we got lazy over the past several generations before things went off the rails in assuming that our culture was on the same page as us because of cultural Christianity. Cultural Christianity allowed us to get complacent and think that the world would generally agree with us. Well, maybe that might be true in the Bible Belt, but most of the rest of the country, no, they've always been anti-Christian. They've always hated us. Absolutely. They hate our values.
You know, and one of the ways I've seen that play out is with discipleship of our kids with sexuality in their life. We were kind of way too hands off with our discipleship of our kids, and we let culture disciple our kids, because our standard was just heterosexuality, and that was a disaster, because we have porn and all kinds of sex outside of marriage, and no-fault divorce. And so parents were okay with whatever their kids did as long as it was heterosexual, and culture could produce heterosexuals. That's about all the culture was producing, even though it wasn't godly.
Now
I think that's part of how we've gotten to where we are, and we're seeing that lack of discipleship just wreak havoc in the lives of our kids. And we can no longer ignore their discipleship because culture raising them is having disastrous results.
Yeah. And so now what you see is not so much
for homosexuality and transgenderism, because their heterosexuality wasn't necessarily healthy either.
Yeah.
But to us, it was moral enough that that was good enough.
Yep. And so what we see now is blended in with what true Christianity and conservatism is, now is blended with just basically anti-wokeness, as long as it's not woke. Mm. And so now, yes. What is the bare minimum standard? Seeing hot girls now. So like, look at the whole Sydney Sweeney, Levi's or whatever jean ad it was, American Eagle. It's like, oh, we're back to promoting sexy looking women now. And it's like, now you're seeing all the so-called conservative pundits like promoting that. Like, yeah, we're back. It's like, hold up. We're just going back. It's like the culture is going to go back and forth. We as Christians need to have a steady understanding of good sexuality.
We don't miss Christ, because both sides can completely miss Jesus in the process.
So much on one hand, I'm saying be skeptical of all the messaging from the world. And that means whether the world is promoting what seems like normative sexuality, or they're promoting things that are clearly depraved or clearly like out of line with LGBT stuff. Doesn't mean that all things heterosexual we should be embracing either. So be skeptical of what the world is putting out, but that's not enough either. We need to be aware of and embracing and promoting and teaching and modeling to our children authentic Christian sexuality. We have our own sexual ethos that we need to lay hold of. And that's, like I mentioned earlier, theology of the body. Like, that has been a major resource for me, that we do have certain, I'm not even a Catholic, because it's Pope John Paul II's, like his tome, it's his big magnum opus. And I only discovered it back in 2015. But he gave words to stuff that I was trying to communicate, like when I was running that group I ran for years, and I was teaching them things about what it means to be made in God's image. And when I was introduced to theology of body, it helped give me more language for it, realizing that, oh, there's other traditions within the church that have a more comprehensive understanding of human sexuality and human anthropology. And when we divorce ourselves from that, as especially as Protestants, then it kind of leaves us to make things up on our own. And I think that's what led to a lot of the craziness we're seeing, and ultimately what's led to side B.
Protestantism can be awfully shallow, right?
Yeah. So, like we think church history started in 1500. So like there's so much depth to both that Orthodox and Catholicism. Like, I'm mining those depths for greater understanding of what it means to be human.
And understanding the things that they got right, and the things that they taught that were good.
Yeah.
The understanding they did have about the human body and sexuality that we could glean a lot from today.
Yeah. So when we start to understand, we actually have the answers the world needs. The world going into LGBT, or the world embracing a pornified culture, we should understand that in terms of the world is really searching for answers about who we are and what we're made for, what we're meant for. And instead of just jumping on their bandwagon of like the blind lead them blind, we should understand we have the source. We have the truth. We just need to start owning it ourselves and promoting it.
Yes. Yes. Understanding it, living it, teaching it. Absolutely. And you know, when we reject the narratives of the world, we can still do that with love and grace, right? Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes people have accepted these worldly terminologies and things because they see the other side kind of hating people and being hardened and obtrusive about how horrible all you people are. But like, no, we can stand up to truth, we can reject the worldly paradigms, and we can still love people, and we commanded to love people. It's not mutually exclusive, and we can do it with the gentleness and grace to soften their hearts and to, just make disciples and lead them towards Christ.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say, I love you. And like, we have to understand, this is not, it's not contradictory to speak truth to people, to hold to good standards, that's not running opposite of love. It's out of love. So it's not, I love you, but I will not endorse, or I will not affirm this identity or this lifestyle. No, it's I love you, and because of my love for you, I have to let you know that this is not going to be good for you. This is not what's God's best for you. And because I love you, and I want to, because I love you, I want to offer help if you want it. I won't force it on you. I won't impose my values on you, but I'm available if you want it. And that's what true compassion is. True compassion is to agree with the truth and to offer valid help for those who actually want it.
Yes. Yes. Offering valid help. That is a good word. All right, Andrew, we are running out of time. Any closing thoughts? I definitely want you to share about your podcast so people can connect that, and we will link that and we'll tag you. But what are some closing thoughts that the world needs to hear right now? Probably we could keep talking all day. But
yeah, I could give a whole lot more thoughts. People are tired
of hearing our voices.
But check me out on YouTube, Rumble, Psycho Bible, all one word, battling about psychology and theology. So I will say the truth, even if it gets me canceled. I've had some videos taken down because I'm just trying to speak up for things that people are looking for.
You know, YouTube will tag our videos with the Trevor Project disclaimer at the bottom. You've probably had some of those.
Oh, it's all the time. It's like, wait, does this video get scanned yet? I don't see the Trevor Project thing on it yet. I expect it. I'll also plug this. If anyone wants to hear me speak in person, or not just me, but a whole bunch of others, I'll be at the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice Conference in Texas this October 10th and 11th. Please come out. We would love to see you guys there. Nicholas C. Jr. will be speaking. Walt Heyer.
Awesome. I've always wanted to hear him or connect with him.
Oh, yeah. So he'll be sharing on the research about the study that YouTube banned me talking about. Walt Heyer will be there from Sex Change Regret. Brad Dacus from Pacific Justice Institute. A bunch of others will be doing breakout sessions. So it'll be a great time of equipping, encouragement. So please check us out at therapeuticchoice.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Andrew. I really appreciate your time, your wisdom, your heart, your discernment. We all have a lot to learn, but we can all be equipped, and that's what we're here for.
Thank you, Brady.
Well, everyone, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Calibrate Conversations. I pray that as you go throughout your week, you can embrace God's standard for your sexuality. Go out, make disciples, love people well, be discerning, reject the evils of the world, and you got this. Christ can help you, and we're here to help you walk along the way. So just check out website, calibrateministries.com, more podcast episodes, resources. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help. Thank you so much.